As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The game is the meal. We're the after-dinner drinks. Pour yourself a cold one. Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And it's down the ice, and there is the horn. One nothing after the first, 4-1 after the second, and for the third consecutive game, the Maple Leafs lose by a score of 4-1.
Oh, come on, Joe. Come on, Joe Bowen. It's even getting to Joe Bowen. I'll tell you that. Joe gives the great calls. That's at the end. And, well, it's tough. It's tough for everybody as the Toronto Maple Leafs lose 4-1 to the San Jose Sharks. We welcome you to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Court Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And, of course, we'll talk to our usual principals. Chris Johnson will join us from Air Canada Center. I wonder the environment there. You know, Ozzie, like, if this game mattered, imagine like in Winnipeg where it's electric, you're beating the Sharks, the crowd's yelling, who's your captain? Who's your captain? I mean, awesome.
And is that how it would have gone?
It did go. Oh, it was great. That's what they were yelling. It was fabulous. And here we have... it can be called a nondescript game, but these first periods are brutal. These starts are brutal for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, you know what? It really is unreal, Gord, when you look at the Maple Leafs, and I think you basically have said it best that over the course of, I don't even remember when they've actually had a real good first period. When was the last time this team, even under Peter Horacek, have had a great first period? I think we got to go all the way back to when the Leafs had a 2-goal lead against Philadelphia, if you remember that, back in November.
No, because they'd had 14 consecutive times when they scored the first goal of the game. Right. They were 14-0-0. I mean, these are all distant memories, but you're right. They would get off to good starts, and they would not relinquish them. Well, it's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. And you look at the onslaught of San Jose in that first period. Yes, they were only winning 1-0. 21 shots by San Jose in the first period. And here's an interesting statistic. The Leafs had 8 shots, by the way. Shot attempts were 33-9 for San Jose. And yes, they're the most desperate hockey club. Let's face it. They've gone on this Eastern swing. They started it off a couple of nights ago in Winnipeg. They lost. And now it's do or die for the San Jose Sharks. So they're the most desperate hockey club. But I got to tell you, there were things, and the way in which I watched the Maple Leafs tonight, yeah, they didn't give up any goals in the third period. 21 shots they gave up in the first period, only 21 the last two periods. So I guess that's an improvement. But there was a control breakout when Morgan Riley had the puck behind the net, and Jay Gardner was in the corner. Now, you picture this, okay? Control breakout. So obviously San Jose is in a trap type of mode because you're not chasing the guy behind the net. And Jake Gardner standing in the corner with his stick up. Like, he doesn't want the pass, so there's one option down. It's almost like, really, guys, is that the effort we're going to put forth the last 11 games of the season? But yet, you know as well as I know that the Leaf fans are hoping that they don't win. And that's what it's become, and we've been watching this for a long time now, and it's still, at the end of the day, the people pay the money, they go to the game to be entertained, and it's the effort that is most disconcerting for me at the end of the night.
Well, you know, just the other day, going to Justin's GTHL game, and then afterwards, the referees did a great job, and the one guy, his question is, do you think we'll get McDavid? I mean, that's everyone's question. That is the hope, and by the way, you got to open the phone lines, 870-0590. Star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. We've had a couple of callers jump the queue, which we always appreciate. Eager to chat with Ozzie and myself. Of course, our regular, the Leaf fan in Nashville, Steve in Nashville. How you doing, Steve? Do we have Steve there? Let's see if we got him here. Steve's pretty...
Yeah.
How you doing, Steve? Sorry about that.
Oh, you just got out of the Grand Ole Opry.
Listen, anything would have been better than that, Ozzy. That was the least lively game.
What, even seeing a mini Pearl review?
Well, let's not get crazy.
Okay, there we go.
Mean, but to segue that, this performance was worth about 10 cents, the same thing that Mini Pearl used to have on her hat.
That's right.
First off, the word professional and this team need to go out the window. I mean, this is just... you just can't look more disinterested. Like you pointed out, Ozzy, Gardner's just standing there. People are just like, yeah, whatever. Is this over yet? You know, the fact that these guys actually do get paid still for this obviously is lost on them. And the fact that people actually pay to watch them is also obviously lost on this group, which pretty much everything is lost on this group. But my question, besides that comment, is, Ozzy, when you come into the league with Detroit, it's a bit of a not such a good team. And Morgan Riley is clearly experiencing a very similar thing. William Nylander will go into training camp coming up later this year with a very similar situation. And whomever the Leafs draft will come into the same thing. And I find it really hard to believe that any young player who's exposed to this, what I'm going to call toxic group, can come out of it better for it. I just don't know how this group stays together. And as a young player, when you came into Detroit, I mean, was it this bad? I mean, you guys didn't have a good team, but at the end of the year, I mean, was it this? I mean, this is just like a whole new level of bad to me.
Yeah. Okay, appreciate the call, Steve. Ozzy?
I would agree with it. As far as just making the comparison to, yes, when I broke in the league back in 1981, Gordon, we were not very good. In fact, it was a 21-team league. I believe we finished 20th. And, of course, as a young rookie, I mean, you are just thankful to be in the league. It's a new experience. You're learning from some of the older guys, and I had a bunch of older guys on that team, Walt McKechnie. I mean, Reed Larson was our captain. But I'd have to say that those older guys approach the game with utter professionalism based on obviously being in the dressing room with them. Yeah, we weren't a very good team, but those guys competed and they wanted to win. I can't say that for this particular group, that the way in which they approach the game, the lack thereof of passion in their particular, just the way that they act on the ice. I would say the most important thing for a guy like Morgan Riley, and he's talking about how can this not affect him in a most toxic way. There's a couple of veteran guys that I think are working with Morgan Riley. I know Stefan Robidoux is one, even though he's out for the rest of the season, but he has taken it upon himself, I think, to make sure and to keep Morgan grounded, encourage him, challenge him, show him what work is off the ice. As well as on the ice. And I think a guy like Stevie Steos is being very positive. So there's part of that which I think that Morgan Riley can hopefully be shielded from any of the negativity continuing on moving next year. And by the way, 6 months off will be very, very positive for Morgan Riley.
It's a short summer when you win the Stanley Cup, but quite the opposite, especially when you've done it a few years.
Well, do the math.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Do the math. And you
agree.
And I have had those long five-month summers, but you go from the middle of April, May, June, July, August, September. There's 5 months before training camp.
Yeah.
5.5 months before the season starts.
I know.
That's a long time. And again, it's going to take a while for Morgan Riley, I think, to just be able to let the season pass and then begin to rehabilitate himself in a positive way with how the Leafs decide to move some pieces and then draft players. And then again, the hope continues on next year.
And don't tweet pictures of where you are in April if you're golfing or on vacation. Just enjoy it. Don't tweet. John in Caledon. Hey, John, welcome to Leafs Nation postgame.
Hi, guys. How are you tonight?
We're good.
Oh, so I had the, I had the pleasure of taking my little daughter with me to the game tonight. And one of the things that rang, like, I mean, it was just very evident, and I think you guys touched upon about the passion, is if the team isn't good enough to play at a caliber level that, you know, San Jose is at or the Pittsburghs of the world or what have you, at least, I guess, show that you love the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've become players or NHLers to play the game of hockey, and it just shows, doesn't matter who it is. I mean, whether you be a rookie or what have you, or Joffrey Lupo putting on the 19 for the Leafs or what have you. Show that you like the game, at least. If you're not playing it, I mean, that's one of the things I think that Leaf Nation isn't, you know, doesn't like. And, I mean, I know there's a lot of fans that really obviously should be showing a little more respect to the team. But, again, when you have a group of fans that are willing to stick by you thick and thin, and you don't even show that you even like the game, it's kind of, you know, concerning to a fan who's playing enough money to go watch the game and keep entertained.
Now, John, let me ask a question. You said some fans should show more respect to the team. How are fans disrespecting the team?
Well, I mean, what I mean by disrespect is, you know, this throwing of the jersey on.
Oh,
the
come on, drop it. There were two jerseys thrown. That's old news.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it still happened, right? It happened, and you don't want to. Whatever. I'm just saying, in general, like, I understand, but one of the things as a fan that I don't like is disinterest. Yeah,
okay.
There's people who are better than others on the thing, but I think the Leafs can, as a team, show a little.
Oh, we lost him there, but just we got the gist of it. And I think, Ozzie, you just, sorry about that. We did lose you in the middle there, but just about, you know, it is hard. Like, when, hey, it sucks. So you're 23 guys and you want to go out there. And I'll give an example that I was talking about it today that I always appreciated, respected how Borja Saaming played on really bad teams. He came to join the Leafs, and there were some pretty good years when he, you know, I mean, not Stanley Cup years.
Okay, so who are the comparables right now? If you're taking a guy like Borja, played with Borja, you were there with Borja, there's nobody that fits that class. You go from Dion Phaneuf to Phil Kessel to Joffrey Lupo. Like, just let's call those guys out right now, because they have been the guys that are the leaders, that are wearing the A's or the C's. And
absolutely.
You tell me whether that effort has been there on a regular basis.
Well, no. And like you said, the last caller, bang on. Got to take a break, and then we'll get some more callers and chat with Chris Johnson as well. Squeeze in some calls maybe a bit later on. 4-1, the San Jose Sharks defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Analysis and insight that you can't get anywhere else. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stelick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan, a 4-1 loss against the San Jose Sharks. Of course, we'll go over a lot of things about tonight's game. It's been, 288 minutes since the Toronto Maple Leafs have had a lead. The news just keeps getting better, worse and worse.
Does that go on all the way back to the Buffalo game? Is that what I'm supposed to compute and think, okay, 288 minutes would be...
Four games plus some.
Oh, okay, thank you.
It's a long, long time. And back then, he was enjoying margaritas in Costa Rica for a bit of it. Probably wishes he was there tonight. Chris Johnson, our man from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. A well-deserved break. How was the trip?
It was awesome, guys. It was really good, especially after the winter we've had. Quite warm and... a chance to relax, and I wasn't on the road with the Leafs out west, so took some time to take a rest and get ready for the playoffs, where obviously I won't be in Toronto, but I'll be traveling around a fair bit, I think.
Okay, Chris, so you left. Nothing has really changed, so your first game back at the Air Canada Center, watching the Maple Leafs against a desperate San Jose Shark team, and basically at the end of one period, I think we knew what the result would be. You obviously would have concurred after one period of play.
Yeah, I mean, you see the San Jose come out, and, you know, obviously they're likely dead in the water too, but they still have some hope and some life, and, pouring 21 shots on in that first period and really exerting themselves. It was clear at that point that they were going to be in control. I mean, I did think after I got the 2-0 and the Leafs scored, They had a chance soon after, and, you know, the Sharks are a bit of a fragile group in their own right, I think, with some of the struggles they've had in the last couple months. But the Leafs just don't have anything right now. I mean, I don't know that I have all the adjectives to explain, what's happening out there. But it's I haven't seen anything quite like it, you know, when I've been, you know, on the ground watching a team, and it's pretty clear that they've been unable to kind of summon it from within themselves, and the top players in particular. It seems to me Peter Horchak was in a roundabout way kind of calling them out by elimination and saying that the team hasn't shown enough conviction or character lately.
Well, and what do you, Ozzy, Phil Kessel is at minus 35, is he now?
He's at minus 35, and, minus three tonight.
And Jim Benning has the all-time record at minus 39, that horrible 84-85 season is the all-time Leaf record in plus-minus. But I've got the great analogy, Chris and Oz, you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear it, Chris, or did you just check out there? Okay,
he never responded.
I didn't think I had a choice. I thought it was a courtesy.
Contestant number two, do you want to hear it? Do you want to go from Monty's cookie jar or, okay, I thought about it with you being on vacation, and I'm serious about this. This is a good analogy, I think. You can tell me what you think. So a lot of years ago with an old girlfriend, so, you know, everything's going good, like the Leaf season was early on, right? Then things just hit a wall, like all those relationships do eventually. Anyway, just whatever. So it's not going so well, right? Like the Leafs. But you've booked a vacation. So you go on vacation together. And it's like what the Leafs are going through now. Like once you land, you realize this was a bad idea. Okay, like, you know, just kind of thing. So it's a week like games like this. And the Leafs just want to get it done. So that's the way, that's my personal comparable about it's been a horrible, horrible trip, vacation for the Maple Leafs. It won't end, so they have to go out on the beach another day, and they're just not into it.
But in this case, the trip has literally lasted for 3 months. And they've won 8 out of 41 games. Which is basically inconceivable in the NHL. I mean, even the worst team in the league should win more than 8 out of 41 games in any given year. And, you know, this is something totally new. I mean, I'm not sure that even the Leafs themselves know the cause of this, but this is a level of futility and frustration that really, you know, hasn't been seen in these parts for a long, long time. Maybe before my time, Gord, when you and Ozzy were around, in the 80s, I know there were some bleak periods there, but this is something different. And really, these last 10 games, I mean, I feel like anything could happen. This was a very, very frustrated Peter Horchak tonight. I mean, very, very emotional. You know, he's been brought in to do a job that's clearly is not one that can be done. And there's still 10 games to be played. I mean, I don't know where this thing goes next.
I think I was chatting with you in the press room about it, that I know you do a ton of stuff on sportsnet.ca, but I try to do a weekly column, and the one I did, I compared to that 1984-85 season, because that seemed to be a benchmark, the worst season ever. And the big thing, as I said, was Al Iafrady was 18, Russ Courtnell was 19, Steve Thomas was 21, Gary Lehman was 20, Todd Gill was 19, Ken Reggett was 20, you know, 20. I mean, all those types of things, the guys that eventually would play to various levels, but be decent NHL players, you know, got a year's, Gary Nyland was there, Bob McGill was there, they're both 21, you know, and that's a big difference nowadays. Ozzy came a little later. He got us out of it a couple years later when he came on board, but that's the one big difference, and I mentioned it in the article on Sportsnet.
Right. Well, it's true, and, you know, I think in this case, you know, I can understand where human nature kicks in here. I mean, you know, if you look at the lineup, the Leafs, you know, put out there tonight, if you're a top player on the team, you probably don't feel like you still have much of a chance at a game like this. I mean, part of it is, you know, Nazem Kadri being suspended, Peter Halden being injured, but also the players that were traded away at the deadline, a couple of the other defensemen that have been shut down due to injury, you know, those type of things. I mean, I can understand why, you know, maybe the top guys on this team are having a difficult time performing, but you know, I guess at some point, and it's sort of been what Peter Horchak's been trying to do. He's pleading with them to try to be pros, to try to, you know, find some kind of way to find some selfish goals, maybe that can work within the team concept, that can better where this team is. But they haven't been able to do it, and really, I haven't seen much. I didn't see much push. I haven't seen much in the games that I've been watching that makes me think that they're going to get out of it. I mean, maybe they will, but I really thought they were going to turn around long before now. And it does seem like this is totally lost. And I can't rule them out losing the rest of the season, honestly, when you watch them play right now. Like, it's not inconceivable. I mean, it would have been unimaginable back in November or early December when we were having these chats. But right now, this group is completely checked out. And, you know, you're not going to win games in the NHL if you don't have some level of commitment to it.
Chris, I want to ask you a question and your particular thoughts in a position of center. Kadri's obviously suspended. He's got three more games. But you look up the middle for the Maple Leafs and you had Bolzak, Trevor Smith, your number two center. Leo Komarov was playing center. And then Sam Carrick, you know, valiant effort, a call-up from the Marlies. He's going to give you an effort. But if you look on the farm or even in the organization, and Freddie Gauthier is a number of years away, but talking about slim pickings when it comes to building a team even up the middle and your strength being up the middle, I'm very concerned about the future of the Maple Leafs just in that position and that position alone.
Well, I mean, it's been an organizational weakness for a long, long time, basically since Matt Sundin left, and then they've never really had a number one center in that time. I remember a number of years ago, Brian Burke, when he was still the GM, doing his end of season thing and saying, well, we had to play Tyler Bozak there, but that won't happen again. You know, it's not Tyler's fault that we put him in a position, you know, that he can't perform in, or one where he can be successful in. And yet all these years, they haven't been able to either go out and make a trade or draft a player that could fill that role. And I guess that's where maybe some hope comes in if you're looking at the lottery, because, you know, Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel are both centermen. I guess really only McDavid is the only player realistically at least have a chance at, unless they make a trade somehow to get the number two pick. Just the way the lottery works, they're likely only going to pick first, fourth, or fifth somewhere in that region. But, you know, maybe you look to start addressing that position there. You know, I know there's been some talk even of seeing if William Nylander can play some center. You know, I'm not sure that's an immediate solution, even if he can. You know, I think at this point he's still just adjusting to the game in the AHL with the Marlies, and he's been putting up some points, but you know, as a winger down there. So you're right. I mean, it's a hole. You know, Nazem Kadri, for some of the off-ice issues and things that have kind of made news lately, and obviously his hit on Matt Fraser earlier this week. You know, I thought he's had a decent season and kind of come along as a centerman, but it's a big issue for the Leafs, and it tends to be a position that you have to have, you know, at least one or two top-end guys before your team has any chance of contending for anything.
You know something, I just got about a minute here, but honest to God, what is the average Leaf fan going to do if the Leafs don't win the lottery? Like, I mean, it's every fan, that's their caveat, right? I mean, it's almost like, you know, it's kind of like that's their escape from reality and about the rebuild.
Well, I mean, I can't blame them. I mean, sports are supposed to be fun. You look what's happening here in Ottawa tonight, where the Sens pull out another unlikely win, their 13th win in 15 games out of nowhere, and they're littering the ice with hamburgers, and you know, everything's fun. I mean, that's kind of what the whole thing is about, I think. I mean, sports, I guess, mean different things to different people, but the Leaf fans haven't had anything to get excited about, not even one player on this roster at this point. You know, I think maybe a little bit with Morgan Rielly, we've seen some flashes here and there, but there's not, this is a bleak, 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 bleak. I can't underline that more time in Toronto sports history and for the Maple Leafs. And I don't blame people that have stuck with this team for wanting that, because, you know, right now I'm not sure where the hope comes from.
Well, we'll be back at it again on a Saturday, I guess. And like you said, we're going to come back to, we'll have some of those out-of-town scores you're alluding to as well, some great games elsewhere. Chris, great to have you back. Thanks as always.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thank you.
Chris Johnston joining us from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. When we do come back, as Chris said, great night in Ottawa, a lot of other places, some great playoff races that are going on. Of course, the Maple Leafs helped the San Jose Sharks tonight with that 4-1 Sharks win. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Once the skates come off, it's game on for us. Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The shot scores! Matt Nieto on a rather innocent-looking centering pass, and it beats Bernier's blocking glove. And with 5.1 seconds remaining in the period, it is now 4-1.
You know, there was a chance for the Maple Leafs to cut the margin to 3-2 in the second period. One great save by Antti Niemi. I'm trying to remember who was off of. But then as Thomas Wingles gets that goal with under six seconds left in the second period, that made it. It was Andrew McWilliam was the big save that Antti Niemi made. But anyway, that made it 4-1 for the San Jose Sharks. And seems like Mark Osborne, as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne with you. That the upside is they don't allow any more goals after in the third period anyway, or what? I don't know if the other team gets bored.
What a great consolation.
I know.
And that Antti Niemi save that you were talking about, we must have glanced over to see the March Madness and missed that save on who it was. So thanks for our producer, Matt, to seeing it was McWilliam who could have had his first National Hockey League goal.
I just remember it was a Leaf player, a guy in blue, whatever. I thought he was on Duke or something like that.
Are you kidding me? Really? Like
really
eight,
what?
8 wins in their last 41 games. You know what I'm saying? Like, is this the Washington Capitals of 1974? You know what I mean?
The Winnipeg Jets in 1980.
Okay.
The Ottawa Senators of whenever.
What about the Red Wings of 1981 I was a part of?
Well, you turned it around like you did the Leafs later on. But, you know, the other thing is people talk about the maximum chance of getting Connor McDavid is to come dead last. And you have a 20% chance of getting Connor McDavid. If you do not get him, then you can get Jack Eichel. And apparently, they are the creme de la creme. I think McDavid is still a cut.
Matt Hanifin, the same thing. I mean, can you imagine him if you pick third with Morgan Riley? There's some hope.
So
it's not, or Noah.
So
what I call him, Matt? No,
but,
that was his brother.
Okay, but
hoping for his brother the year after.
When the point being is, unlike the Buffalo Sabres, who you knew this was going to be the way, and again, to compare to the 84-85 Leaf team, you knew that was going to be the way. It was going to be a tough season, probably good chance you come dead last. This was a team that was built and we thought we're going to make the playoffs. So they're not even tanking it properly. If they were trying to get the best chance of getting McDavid in that, that didn't even work out properly.
Well, I think they're doing everything that they can.
Well, now they are.
As far as, you know, what the record has been since the beginning of the new year, like what more do you want them to do? Like there isn't anything. They're so far ahead now of Edmonton, like 9 points. Like, do you think Edmonton can make up those 9 points? No, because as we look at the schedule, and I don't remember what the Leafs' remaining bottom feeder teams. I know they play Ottawa 3 more times. Like the Hamburglar. Like the Hamburglar is not giving up any anything against the Maple Leafs.
And you even wonder, do Leaf fans even care about being spoilers for the Ottawa Senators? Ottawa fans, I mean, people's
just, I think they're going to start to like the Senators.
I think so, too.
You know?
Let's get to head coach Peter Horchuk, because we always do hear from the Maple Leaf head coach, and I don't know what to say now. He actually seems pretty calm and together. And
you were saying this morning that the atmosphere was very positive.
Very upbeat.
There was a buzz, upbeat.
It was, totally, on the morning skate.
Peter was waving to you in the stands, from what I understand.
Yeah, well,
acknowledged you.
Most of the team does wave to me at some point during the practice.
Going
that's
off
not
the,
ice. The order. But,
well, because you're always down there asking for a stick, and they're kind of waving you. Go on.
Well, I didn't get any sticks tonight, but let's see what Peter Horchuk thought about the 20 guys who yield the sticks tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
What's it say about the future of this team, the leaders continue to play flat and inspire hockey?
Not good. It's not good. I mean, you got to be driven by your best players, and we can't get a start, and we can't get a work ethic that is acceptable. And so it's just, it was like a pro team playing a non-pro team. It was outclassed, outworked, outskated, outhit. I'm not sure outhit. They didn't have to. They had the puck the whole time. It wasn't good.
You had a feel particularly for your goaltender on it like this?
You know, Bernie just, you know, he does his thing. He stays in there and keeps us in the game, and he's a pro. Like, there's certain guys that you say, you know, they're doing their thing the way they're supposed to. And there's too many guys when they may start for part of the game and then they fall off, and it's just not the way it has to be. We need an effort. We need everybody pushing and not sitting back and pulling on the chain. We need to be pushing. We need to be going after it. And we need to have that kind of attitude. And it's not there. It's just like they're sitting back.
You
this may be a tough thing to answer, but can you put your finger on why that message isn't getting through to these guys about the start?
You know, I can't tell you that. Don't have an answer for that.
Bernier echoed your sentiment about the pro team versus the junior or non-pro team, but was that your message to the group after the game? Like, was it a fiery message post-game here?
Not after the game. After the first. I mean, it's just, you go through this situation and you talk about it. We talk about the way we want to play, how we know that 10 of the last 15 games we've been behind after the first period and we've chased the game. And if you don't have the courage or the character to be able to understand that that's the most important thing and be ready to play and to be pushing, then there's a problem.
As part of the process as it's been, Peter, does it provide the organization with an indication of who wants to be here moving forward?
You know, I think that every single time we step on the ice, we're showing ourselves. So it's, you know, you're showing yourself to the fans, to the management, to what we do. So, you know, character's got to be important, and we've got to rally around it, and we've got to rally around where we want to be. And we understand that we're not in the playoffs. We understand that, but it doesn't change your work ethic. One thing you have is an attitude all the time. One thing you can give to your teammates and to the fans is your attitude and your approach to the game, your work ethic. That doesn't ever have to change. I see Sammy Carrick working hard, and I see Zach Sill working hard and trying to do what he can as a fourth line players. But if you can't bring a good attitude and a work ethic and a little bit of an attitude to drive this team while we're short and while things are hard, that's when you should get revved up. And so that's not good enough for me.
Give him credit, Mark Osborne and Peter Horchuk coming out. It's really hard to find new ways to go about it. He started with such optimism the first time about the 5-5-5 and keeping shots on goal down and all these things, systems he was going to implement and felt confident he could implement. And now it's kind of beyond him.
Well, it is. And you can hear it in his voice. I think after about the first minute, there was a part of me that felt very sorry for Peter Horchuk because, you know, what he said in that post-game interview was, can't get a start, can't get a work ethic, outclassed, outworked, need everybody pushing, and everybody is not pushing. I mean, you get effort out of a guy recently called up. Well, he should be doing that. That is, again, is a given of the Sammy Carricks, the Zach Sills, guys that are at least David Booth. I mean, Leo Komarov to a degree, but Leo Komarov's not been the same player since, and I think it was his shoulder. Maybe not necessarily the Ovechkin concussion, but when he hurt his shoulder there, the one game, I think it was either a game or two after he came back.
Well, it was in Boston, right? Too. We got New Year's Eve.
Yeah. He's not been the same player. There's not that emotion, and he'll get in there on the forecheck and have some hits. But at the start of the year, like, he was a freight train, and he was effective, and he was doing a lot of those things. But you then go down the list and say, if there's just a handful of guys, like, what do you expect with a handful of guys doing the work? It's going nowhere.
Well, we got a handful of guys now. We've added another one. Mike Trakos joining us from the National Post. And, you know, for all of us, whether it's Peter Horchuk having to face the music as the coach and Ozzy and I doing the postgame show, you're writing in that. It's baffling is beyond the word. I used baffling for a while. But, you know, Peter Horchuk, Mike, just kind of, it's beyond anyone about trying to explain this lack of anything.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on, as always. And it almost reminds me of what Randy Carlyle was saying at the end of the season when he kept using the word mind-boggling, and he just had no explanation for it. And someone asked tonight, why is this team so slow out of the gates, and why can't they seem to come out with any kind of jump, when clearly that's the message that they're sending right before the game, is to kind of have a good first period. And Horchuk pause for a few seconds and he says, I just don't know. I don't get it. And it seems like Carlisle last year, the head coach is running out of answers. And I think at this point, and it's probably clear to everyone, whether you're a fan or on the team or in management, that it's probably not so much a coaching problem as it is a player or team problem, and clearly this is not the group that you want going forward. And we're due for a rebuild. We're due for a new core group of players. I think that's, with 10 games remaining, I think that's the biggest takeaway right now.
Michael, do you think that there is that option? And I think we all look at it and say, man, why don't you just sit down Phil Kessel? And if you were to sit down Phil Kessel for an extended period of time, maybe the message does, in fact, get through and you then get a work ethic, because maybe there's that aspect internally in that dressing room where, you know what, they've even lost respect for, you know, the people that are behind the bench. And not that they've necessarily quit on Peter Horchuk, but you know what I'm saying is, though, we've come to the point where unless that does end up occurring, I don't think anything is going to change. Like, what is going to change for the last 10 games of the season when you're outworked, you're outclassed, and it seems like this has been a consistent behavior or lack thereof that we've been witnessing for quite some time now?
I'm with you, Ozzie, 100%. And I'm getting tired of the fact that Horacek has strong words for, well, he didn't name Kessel, but basically read between the lines when he's talking about guys not having the character or conviction, really, to play tonight. And he's talking about that top line. He's talking about Phil Kessel and Van Riemsdyk and Tyler Bozak and maybe even Joffrey Leupold to an extent. And yet you look at their minutes and power play minutes, they're getting the most out of any other player on the team. Time on ice, still up there, more minutes than guys like a Kozin or guys like a Still or a Ponick, who are really busting their behinds and really the only ones that you kind of notice. And Sam Carrick, you put him in that category as well. And why aren't those guys getting the power play time? Why aren't 10 games left, the team is completely out of a playoff spot and you're going in a new direction. Why not reward some good efforts out there? Like, what is there to lose? And he just keeps after the game mentioning, okay, we're not getting this out of that player. Well, do something about it. Don't just complain after the game.
Well, the other one is it went a little bit higher when they did something about Nazem Kadri. And in the case of Brendan Shanahan and Dave Nonis, who put this group together for Peter Horchuk, I mean, Peter Horchuk had basically zero input in this team as it's constituted right now. Why take Nazem to task and nobody else? I mean, at this point, like, about just because it's like, I can remember when you used to lose, because I went through it, but whoever the general manager was, I was only it for a short period of time, but they incurred a lot of wrath when they were losing. Pat Gillick got slammed as Stan Pat Gillick for a number of years. I mean, that kind of criticism for not making enough trades for the Jays and things. Like, I mean, why is this Teflon-ness about the management that they just kind of disappear and aren't front and center and aren't, you know, out there, you know, making a few bold statements to show, like Peter Horchuk should say, you know, the give a bleep meter, apply it to the office a little bit. Like, does anyone give a bleep? Seriously? Like, it doesn't seem like it.
Well, I think we're going to get some moves in the summer. I almost can guarantee that we're going to get some real shocking, or maybe not shocking, but some big franchise defining or changing moves in the summer. I don't know what you can do up until then. You mentioned the Nazem Kadri situation, and I think that was a situation where Kadri really forced their hand in terms of getting a team imposed a suspension. I don't necessarily think you're going to suspend Phil Kessel for not giving a bleep, as you say, but
I'm not saying suspend them, but, you know, like, there's just, wow. I mean, just,
well, you know what? He did it with Joffrey Leupold, the one, he didn't play in overtime. He only had three shifts in the third period, but we'd like it, or what you're suggesting is, what about Phil? What about Tyler? When do they get extended periods of time on the bench?
And what about Brendan saying something about those guys, calling some of the other guys out, or Dave Nonis calling some of the other guys out? You know, I don't want Harold Ballard back.
I think that's almost overstepping their boundaries. I think that's the coach's decision. And really, I don't know if Peter Horacek has been told that you can't necessarily do that. I think he has full reign, and I'm with you, though. I don't know why he doesn't exercise it. And maybe you don't have to completely make one of those guys a healthy scratch, or maybe you do, but I'm with you in the sense that something should be done, whether it's cutting their power play time, cutting their ice time completely, splitting them up. But maybe something that needs to be done. I don't necessarily think, though, that Brendan Shanahan coming down and commenting on Kessel, especially when Kessel's a guy that probably want to trade in the summer. Why do you want to really kind of spoil whatever type of value that he might have? I don't know if that necessarily serves a real good purpose in that regard.
Yeah, the only thing I can say to that, Gord, in that comment is if you do something or make a public statement from Brendan or Dave in regards to your best player, I think that just creates more of civil unrest within the entire group that it probably may not be necessary.
Well, I'm not telling about singling a guy out. I'm just saying, like, wow, like, can someone say to the Leaf fans that, you know something, this is not acceptable. Like, seriously, like, you know.
But what is changing?
And
addressing the fans, what is going to change? Because it has to start within that dressing room with the players.
Glenn Grunwald grabbed the microphone, right, Mike? You remember that, right? Glenn Grunwald grabbed the microphone the final Raptor game of the season as boos rained on him. And they happened to be playing in Maple Leaf Gardens by coincidence. And, you know, he just basically said to the fans, you've taken it, enough of this bleep, and I'm going to make sure, and I'm going to make, you know, like a pledge to you. And the team started turning around. But I always, you know, people gave him credit that the last thing anyone wants to do is go out there and talk to them. But it was kind of a galvanizing point in moving forward. I mean, I just think those things can go a long way. Maybe I know I'm sort of hepped on a little bit too much, but I just find, it's great. I'm flying home. I'm flying here. I'm flying there. Okay, no problem. We lose three more. Okay, come on back. I'm gone. I'm out again. I'll be back next Wednesday. Whatever. And then I see a truck driving around Toronto, the official analytics supplier to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, they want to spray paint that truck black right now or something like that. You know, I'm going, like, seriously? Sorry, I'm just a little, I need counseling. I need therapy.
But you know what, Gord, what you're asking for is exactly what Brian Burke kind of was for the Leafs when he was here, where he was making those grand statements, whether it was an end-of-season address or he would just have an impromptu news conference where he would kind of basically say, hey, we're going to trade for John Tavares and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And you know what, I don't mind that Brendan Shanahan and the managerial staff is taking kind of a different approach where they're really laying low and they're taking a really, I guess I'm perceiving it as a slow, more methodical approach rather than promising the world and saying change is going to happen and you're really going to notice it next season. You know what? Chances are we're probably not going to have a huge turnaround in terms of how this team plays next season. This is probably we're in for basically the long haul, and I don't necessarily think you're going to hear a whole lot of Shanahan after the season or even throughout the summer. And I think that's basically been his MO since he took over.
So slow and methodical is the way they played tonight and this Western Canadian road trip, and we got to accept it? Like, that's called slow and methodical? Seriously? Okay.
Well, look at what Winnipeg did. For years, that team's fan base was crying out for change, saying Kevin Cheveldayoff wasn't doing enough, wasn't doing this, wasn't doing that. And, you know, all he was doing was slowly accumulating prospects and building piece by piece until we're at the point now where Winnipeg looks like they're going to be a playoff team this year. And when you look at what they have in the pipeline coming up, especially after with the trade with Buffalo, I know the Hockey News is picking them as Stanley Cup contenders for the next few years. And that's kind of what you want in a team. You don't want that quick kind of turnaround where you've got one bad year followed by a good year followed by a bad year. I think you want that long-term sustainability, and I think that's what Toronto's really kind of looking for right now.
Are you at all concerned, Michael? I think we were applauding a guy like Morgan Rielly maybe 2-3 weeks ago because it appeared as though here's one young guy that seems to have been, I think, even benefiting from more playing time because that was going to be the what I think Maple Leaf management or coaches were saying, you know what, we're going to play our young guys and just let them play, let them gain confidence, encourage them. I'm starting to look at Morgan Rielly now as being and starting to get infected in some respects because Morgan Rielly in many regards has been very, very quiet as of late. And you wonder if the season doesn't simply end too early for him just so that he can be rehabilitated a little bit psychologically and emotionally and mentally with the long summer ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you consider his age and definitely his experience in the league, Here's a guy where the losing seems to be weighing on his shoulders. And, you know, it's easier to develop, and you probably can speak to this more than I can. I think it's definitely easier to develop in a winning atmosphere than a losing atmosphere. And you look at teams like San Jose and Los Angeles, it seems like whenever they do have a prospect, they seem to flourish because they're just surrounded by really good players who are playing the right way. And just by being around a team that's winning, it seems to help a lot. So I'm with you. The season could not end soon enough for Morgan Riley, and hopefully he goes to the World Championships and is able to kind of end his hockey season on a high note with Canada. But, yeah, it is kind of concerning, and I wouldn't be too concerned about how he's playing. I'm just more concerned about the mental state that he's in right now.
Well, you know, it's kind of like in broadcasting, that's what happened to Ozzie under my tutelage. You know, he joined the kind of a thing, and he can go in cruise control and just have a great career in broadcasting, right, Oz?
Well, you know what? It's because of this has been very, very difficult. It's been on-the-job training right here this first year. Never thought it would be like this, that we'd have to be talking in such extremes.
Well, same with Michael. Like you said, you know what? And what I hope is, and that's when I wrote the column about the 84-85 team, is the players can kind of do what we do, is you go back and look at it, and in some ways it challenges you because you have to write differently than you thought. We have to broadcast differently than we thought. And, you know, you look back hopefully we still do a good job covering a rather unique and, I hate to say it, depressing environment that was unexpected.
Yeah, I've covered this team for 10 years, Gordon. I've had one playoff round so far, so it's been a long haul for me. But, yeah, it just seems like this year is just wearing down on more people than, like, I talked to other reporters, and constant is we've never seen anything quite like this. And yeah, in 10 years on the job, I've never seen a team that had so much promise, at least at the beginning of the year, that has fallen to such depth. It would be different if this was a Buffalo situation where going in you knew the team was going to be a bottom feeder, but to go from a playoff spot only a few months ago to where they are now, it really is astounding.
You know, and Ozzie, I'll ask you the question. It's a good question to put on Twitter as well. In all seriousness, like Mike brings up the point, what is a comparable? I don't mean for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean in general that you had an NHL team that was, you know, set to battle for a playoff spot, have a strong start, be solidly in the playoffs when you're supposed to, U.S. Thanksgiving and at Christmas, and then have this. Like,
this,
I mean,
is historical. This is historical.
It might be.
Like, when has this ever occurred? I don't remember people ever talking about something similar to this. I don't remember as a kid growing up and watching and
like any other
people
NHL
talking
team.
About
any
it.
Any other NHL.
And I don't remember in my entire career thinking about something as comparable as this.
Yeah,
the closest comparison would be the 2013-2014 Leafs. Which is just kind of like,
that's right. Well, they went one better this year.
Maybe a couple years before that.
Yeah, they went one better.
Yeah, because in early February, I think they were second. They were ahead of Philadelphia by leaps and bounds.
Actually, you know, who was in charge? Is it John Torrey or is it Kathleen Wynne? Do we ban 18-wheelers in Toronto or Ontario? Because they always go off the road, right? Like, can we do something like that? Brian Burke coined that phrase, whatever it may be, because it is the same thing, and they just different ways they do it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just, I don't have any words for it.
I know.
And 10 more games.
It was a dramatic pause.
It feels like 100.
I know.
Well, you know what? Keep reading some of Gord's articles here, and I'm sure he's going to give you a little bit of food for thought, and you're going to be able to come up with lots of good stuff in the last 10 games of the season, Michael.
Yeah, you'll be an autopilot. Just flip. Just do it. I won't nail you for plagiarism either, okay? Just take it and run, okay? You've done a lot for us.
Thanks, boys.
Okay, Michael.
Always a pleasure.
Michael Tracos from the National Post.
You know what we need to do?
What's
like,
that?
And I don't know when our next break is, but in order to bring a little bit of interest level to this whole, you know, post-game collapse once again, is we need the out-of-town
scoreboard. Yeah, we're going to take the break.
Oh, we're taking
and
the break.
We will come back because, I mean, great games, compelling game. This was a very important game for the San Jose Sharks. This would have been a disaster for them to lose tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. It didn't matter for the Leafs, but for the Sharks, it's a big, big win. And as you say, as the Hamburglar fever, like you have these stories of guys you never heard about, and has taken it to another level in Ottawa, and the Ottawa Senators showing the year of Canadian teams. Calgary, Winnipeg, surprise teams that way. So we'll come back and do those out-of-town scores. I know you love to do that, Ozzie.
I really do. I mean, there's some great games tonight.
Welcome back. It's a 4-1 final. The San Jose Sharks over the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. It's your postgame workout. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back, Leafs Nation. Postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, a 4-1 loss to the San Jose Sharks tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're going to get to the out-of-town scoreboard in a few minutes' time because a lot of big ones today, exciting scores out of town. But let's hear Jonathan Bernier. We hear he might have been a little bit more animated than usual. What was it, 38 shots? He stopped 38 out of 42. He faced 42 shots in all. And here he is after tonight's 4-1 loss.
We're probably a junior team against the NHL team tonight. I don't know how many times we're going to talk about having a good start. And just don't do it.
In winning battles, physically, it seemed to be a mismatch out there.
Yeah. We talked about staying out of the box, and I think we got three in the first there, and then we were chasing the game again.
Bernie, you talked about trying to focus on just yourself. How hard is it, to do that right now?
Well, obviously, like I mentioned, it is hard, but that's my job. That's what I get paid to do, is try to stop the puck and try my best out there. And, they got a lucky goal on the fourth one there, and 5 seconds in the second period, so I think that really changed the momentum for us.
What kind of toll does it take on your body when you're in the crouch for that long in those long shifts?
Tonight was tough. I felt they were in their zone pretty much the whole game, and even sometimes they weren't shooting, but they were cycling the puck, and they're a strong team, so they were winning battles in the corner there.
You talk about the team talking about getting off to a good start and not being able to follow through on that. Can you put your finger on why that's happened?
No.
Jonathan, is there anger in here? Is there frustration? How would you sum up the mood?
Well, if there's no anger, there's something wrong. I think everyone should be pretty angry right now about our game, about the way we play as a team.
Do you feel that? Is there?
I just said it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, I wasn't sure.
Hard to hear questions day after day after day, but Jonathan Bernier saying it was this game anyway, a junior team against NHL teams, and when you see 42 shots again, and his record is suffering, his negotiating position is suffering, all those kind of things, this is a little bit more than the ordinary from the Leaf goaltender.
No, it really is, and it's all about frustration, and when you get to the point of, you approach the game, and he's one of the guys that obviously is approaching the game in a way in which he wants to give the team an opportunity to win. And there's only so much you can do as a goaltender. So he can't be one of the forwards there. He can't be on the ice leading by example as far as just providing any type of passion or spark that a defenseman or a forward can do. So he's in the net. And yeah, I think it's boiling over. And I'm rather shocked, Gord, that there hasn't been more things going on, even in practice. Like, there were times when things weren't going well, and I can count all the different teams that I was on where there were some fights that were going on in practice because you got so fed up with one another because of what was going on that it started to affect everyone else on the ice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that, to me, is healthy. That's like a family. How many families don't argue or have a good fight? That's all part of, I think, caring and showing some emotion. But this team is checked out, and when you no longer care, then it really does show the way that they've been.
Well, performing. and they've gone to great lengths to say they do love each other. Weird, you know what I mean? It's just, but then you do everything that shows the other. And yeah, you're right. I just, like, you'd like to see one of those, hear about that at practice, that kind of thing. And it's been a lack of all that. And so Jonathan Bernier, I didn't say calling out the team, but just, you know, saying how he saw it.
That's strong, though.
Yeah.
You know, talking about
junior team.
We're like a junior team, right? Like, that's worse than the American League as far as.
That's correct, yeah.
Isn't that right?
Well, it depends what junior team. We got to ask him what junior team he's talking about. Connor McDavid or what? But anyway.
Well, somebody was talking about Kentucky being a, I mean, they would legitimately contend in the East. In the NBA.
Oh, in the NBA, yeah.
Somebody was talking about it.
I know. We do tend to lose perspective. I know.
People in basketball,
that.
Eh?
Well, that's why we're here in hockey. We're very well grounded. And, well, it's next year, I guess it won't be next year. We're being told it won't be next year for the Toronto Maple Leafs now. But just to be in the playoff race, like I even thought the other night, you know, a team like the Calgary Flames, for example, they lose a game and then you go down like, it seems like 8 spots. It's like, didn't they just win 5 games in a row or what have you? Now, we'll get to them in a second. Let's talk about the games in progress, first of all, as you look at a very busy out-of-town scoreboard night with a lot of playoff implications.
Well, you know what? And absolutely right, Gord, because each and every game, and I guess of note, are the Canadian teams. And a bunch of them were certainly playing this evening. And here are the ones in progress, certainly in Vancouver, with about 30 seconds left in the second period. The Columbus Blue Jackets, 3 goals. In the second period, the Vancouver Canucks had 2. They're down 3-2 as we near completion of period number 2. Bo Horvath is 12th. Daniel Sedin is 15th, put Vancouver up 2-0. And then Columbus, 3 straight goals. Rene Bork is 4th. Marco Dano, his 6th. And Cam Atkinson on the power play, his 16th. So stay tuned as far as that game in Vancouver.
And for the Vancouver Canucks, it looks like Eddie Lack might have to take them the distance at Ryan Miller. Now not available till the playoffs, likely, if they make the playoffs. On the other side, the Colorado Avalanche, a disappointing season for them, and the Arizona Coyotes, a possible Connor McDavid destination as well. 3-1 Colorado. Arizona took a 1-0 lead. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is 18th of the year. Then it was Ryan O'Reilly, his 12th, Jerome Iginla, his 23rd, and Freddie Hamilton, his 1st, giving Colorado the 3-1 lead.
And what about those Montreal Canadiens? I know they're hosting one of the bottom feeders in the Eastern Conference, that being the Carolina Hurricane. It was a 4-0 shutout for Carey Price this evening. Dale Weiss is 10th. Gallagher gets goal number 20. David Desharnais his 12th. And Max Pacioretty, goal number 35, the first player in Montreal's history, I guess. I don't think it really matters. Last player to score back-to-back 35-goal seasons was Vinny Damfus back in 92, 93, 93, 94.
Well, quite an accomplishment. Here we're talking, 20 years since then. Good for Vinny Damfus, some Montreal memories that way. Boy, the Ottawa Senators, it's like a miracle on ice to a degree this year, and the Boston Bruins could be a miracle on ice as well if they keep sliding in the wrong direction. They pick things up of late, but the Ottawa Senators, 6-4 winners over the Boston Bruins. The Hamburglar normally just allows 2 or fewer goals, but still comes up the winner. They were giving out hamburgers. They were throwing hamburgers out on the ice. They served hamburgers to the media. So having a lot of fun with that in Ottawa. Kyle Turris is 18th. Milan Mihalik is 13th. David Legouin is 9th. Jean-Gabriel Pageau was 5th. And then with it tied 4-4 after 2 periods of play, Bobby Ryan is 18th in the 3rd period. And Kyle Turris is 2nd of the game in the 19th. For Ottawa. For Boston, Carl Soderberg is 11th, Ryan Spooner his 4th, Ryan Spooner again for his 5th, and Torrey Krug his 12th, 6-4 Ottawa.
I know, but you look at some of the production of the Ottawa Senators, and who are these guys? Mark Stone, 3 assists on the night. I mean, it's somebody different each night getting it done for the Ottawa Senators. Let's move over to another game of interest, certainly in the Eastern Conference, the Florida Panthers. Behind Jaromir Jagr's 13th goal of the season. And by the way, that is goal number 718, I believe. Passes Phil Esposito, moves into 5th place now on the all-time list. Brandon Peary had his 17th, Scotty Upshaw his 8th. Eric Cole, goal number 20 for the Red Wings. Luongo gets the win, so a big win for Florida to try to at least keep pace with the Ottawa Senators.
And more goals than Babe Ruth had home runs as well, 714. So how about that little tweak there?
Oh, thank you, Gord.
No problem.
We're just around the corner.
And he played for the Red Sox a little bit, Babe Ruth. How about that, Oz? A little bit, throw that in. Give you a little bonus round out there, bonus coverage.
Okay, we got 4 more finals.
Washington, 3-2 winners over Minnesota. A big win for the Capitals. Alex Ovechkin is 46th. Evgeny Kuznetsov is 9th. And Ovechkin is 2nd of the game and 47th, the game winner. Christian Fulin and Jared is second, and Jared Spurgeon his ninth. Dubnyk in goal, but this time it's a loss. A 3-2 Washington Capitol win.
Well, and Holtby a win.
Yeah, sorry. Net. Sorry for the Holtby okay. family.
Anyways, a big game in Winnipeg. A big contest against the St. Louis Blues. So, again, a big test for them. But Winnipeg, as you would agree, they're built for the playoffs. And no Dustin Byfuglien still. And yet, David Backes of the Blues puts the Blues up 1-0 after two periods of play, his 25th of the season. And then what about this guy? I mean, nobody expected Drew Stafford. He scores his 15th goal of the season to tie this, to force it into overtime with about under 7 minutes to play in the game.
That's 6:44. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his fifth goal in 8 games. Wow. 11 points in 15 since the trade. And I think he was probably a throw-in because he's a UFA at the end of the year. But anyways, he also scored in the shootout, as did Andrew Ladd. So a big win for the Winnipeg Jets, 2-1 over St. Louis in a shootout.
Well, taking a look at another big one, the Dallas Stars 2-1 winners over the Pittsburgh Penguins. What is going on with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Bill Guerin joined us today at Hockey Central at noon. I was on with Jeff Merrick and Doug McLean. And
what does Bill Guerin do for the Penguins?
He is like assistant GM or something like that. They got a whack of them.
Okay.
They got a lot of them. They got Tom Fitzgerald and, you know, guys like that. Billy Guerin. He still wouldn't say, what was the word? What was the slogan they had on the T-shirt after they won the Stanley Cup? Something about justice.
Repeat?
No, he still wouldn't cough up what the slogan was. They're sworn to secrecy, even though it didn't pan out.
Wow.
But
okay.
They lose 2-1 for Dallas. Brett Ritchie, his sixth. Jamie Benn is 24th. And for Pittsburgh, their only goal is Chris Letang, his 11th.
And the only other game that concluded this evening, big win for the Calgary Flames, 4-1 against the visiting Philadelphia Flyers. You would probably say Philadelphia's Western trip hasn't really turned out very, very well. So
no.
I think you would say the fat lady is Kate Smith singing still in Philadelphia?
She's in her grave right now, but she does sing on video with Lauren Hart starts, Gene Hart's daughter, and you know.
Okay, anyways, let's get to the scorers. I'll give you the Philadelphia one. Claude Giroux was the lone scorer for the Flyers, his 19th of the season. Dennis Wiedemann, goal number 13th. TJ Brody, goal number 11. Those are defensemen, by the way, for Calgary, in case you didn't know.
Okay.
And what about Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, both on the power play in the third period? Monahan is 28th. Gaudreau his 20th of the season. Big win for Calgary, 4-1 over the Philadelphia Flyers. Do you care to give us maybe a standing update at all as far as the Canadian teams that won this evening? I know Vancouver's game still is in progress, but Calgary jumps back into the third spot in the Pacific at 83 points. So Winnipeg is the wild card spot at 84. So LA is still a couple of points back, and San Jose does themselves a favor, but they're still 6 points back.
Wow.
So how about that?
You just tied a nice bow on it as far as things go.
Well, and the Senators are only 2 points back of the Bruins right now with a game in hand. So things continue to be interesting. And with the win for Florida tonight, they still remain 5 points behind the Boston Bruins, but they're certainly knocking on the door, not out of it. You know that Florida does visit the Maple Leafs next week. So newsworthy items right there for you, Gord.
And you have to remind me as well that I've got to get a book to Sean Thornton. He wants a copy of the book 67.
Oh, he does.
He did. He busted me. Well, you were there when he busted me.
Oh, I've learned
last
a lot.
Time.
I've learned a lot about the Leaf history as a result of reading that book.
What chapter are you on?
I think I'm on the fourth chapter now. That's game number two.
What was your favorite of the first three?
Well, I got to tell you, the eye-opening part for me was, and I think you described it well, as the beginning of the end of an era, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the way in which the Leafs, and maybe it was a little bit of the arrogancy that was a part of the culture back in the 60s. And was it Bob Davidson, their head scout? And when he just decided where I think the Bird Dogs were telling him about this young boy in Perry Sound. And he says, tell the young man to give me a call in a couple of years when he, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was just a great story where the Bruins were just sold on him and they were basically living in Perry Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history for Bobby Orr. But the way that the book described how Bobby Orr as a maybe a 12-year-old was just kept on having the puck and nobody could get it off and him, right? At this tournament, playing with guys a few years older than him, right?
They went to look at a kid named Ricky Eaton on the other team. And Bobby Orr's grandfather was the biggest Leaf fan going.
Yep.
And Bob Davidson, who had way more hits than misses. I mean, he did a fabulous job as an architect. But back then, you could just tell those guys to cool their heels, and the Leafs will come looking in a few years and just say—
And get the boy in school. We'll get him in school.
Yeah, yeah, we'll take a couple of years, and maybe Bob Orr will be on the Leaf blue line. But anyway, it was— now, we are back on Saturday for Hockey Nation. Always fun. So you think we may get Don Maloney? We're gonna do all your— let's name your roommates. So Eddie Olchuk, Don Maloney.
Why don't I start at the beginning?
Okay.
In Detroit, Mike Foligno until he got traded.
What a great one. That's a great roommate.
And he was part of the trade that brought Jim Schoenfeld over to the Red Wings. So then Shoney became my roommate for the next couple of years. Then I went to New York with the Rangers. Anders Hedberg for a number of years. Then Don Maloney, of which very similar to Eddie Olchuk. So Eddie. For all of my time here in Toronto. And then even when we went in to Winnipeg, we roomed together. And then I came back here, and it was a little bit of Rob Pearson. It was a little bit of Billy Berg. Then back to New York, it was, I don't even remember. Because that was the most unmemorable season to complete my National
Hockey
League
And that's
your most
career. Recent one you can't remember.
Yeah, all I can remember is the coaches or lack thereof. That I had with the Rangers.
Now,
throwing him under the bus, my final coach.
Did
you fill in the blank?
Okay. Did Jim Schoenfeld bring his own mattress on the road?
Yeah, you know what? He was doing those City Mattress commercials, was he not? Probably shouldn't mention that, but yes, I commended him very much so for those commercials. They were great.
Well, we'll see. Maybe we can knock off.
But he did have
one.
A bad back. I do remember that. I go, Shoney, you're not getting one of the firmer mattresses.
So. From City Mattress. Well, unfortunately, the Toronto Maple Leafs are sending a lot of people to their City Mattress early with some of the games of late. Again, a terrible start. A 4-1 loss to the San Jose Sharks.
And you're not on your mattress. You're on the couch. And you've been needing a psychiatrist for quite some time now. So... anyways, I'm doing my best to encourage you. It's not over yet. 10 more games.
I just, I was too long.
It's going to be a great night in Ottawa on Saturday night.
I'm
the Hamburglar.
Let's go.
Reimer versus the Hamburglar.
Let's, what's the slogan? Like, diffuse the burger. No bun. Make it a vegetarian. I don't know. Something like that. We'll find out on Saturday. Nice having Eliza here, too. That's good. Yeah. All the Osborne family. Good studio audience. Thanks for listening. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. The Osborne family and Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.